Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today's date is August 27th, 2002. Today's session is Faith-Based and Faithful, Lutheran Social Ministries and New Initiatives, Hillary Clinton's Village or Pat Buchanan's Bootstraps, presented by Drew Gensler, number GEDR2002-02. Let's listen in.
Cough, sneeze, or otherwise, it's all going to be on tape, just so you know. People, it's for posterity now, from here on. My name's Drew Gensler, and I work for the Lutheran Church, but in Lutheran Services in America, which is a sort of roll-up umbrella group for Lutheran Social Service agencies and Lutheran Children and Family Service agencies across the country. And we, yesterday, our session was kind of on defining what all that is, but I'll shorten it just by saying that it's a big network, sort of reflecting the sort of several hundreds-year-old commitment by Lutherans to social ministry and service in society. But this LSA group, Lutheran Services in America, as a national group, an entity, is really only 5 years old. And so it's a very interesting thing. We're a small national staff of about 12 people. And so it's we instead of the usual corporate hierarchy of having members sort of, you know, beholden to us and reporting to us, the Lutheran Services thing is exactly the opposite. We're sort of this national staff, very flat, and we are providing services and sorts of connections and other things to Lutheran social ministry groups, agencies, big and small, hospitals and soup kitchens, adoption agencies, counseling agencies, pretty much the gamut across the country. That's kind of where LSA is coming from. I work in public policy in Washington, and there are two of us, our director and me. So I'm the rest of the office. And I'll actually, in interest of full disclosure, I should tell you, I'll be leaving that job in about 2 weeks to go to the UK and study there. So I'm kind of, you're catching me on the way out after 2 years, but I hope I can represent what, you know, our work's been about there. And I hope actually to present a few more abstract concepts and then really invite your conversation. And I wanted to start doing that, if we could kind of quickly just have you introduce yourself and say, you know, if you have a connection with Lutheran social ministry in some way. We tried this yesterday as well, and pretty much everybody was able to come up with some sort of indirect or maybe very direct connection. Maybe your congregation or your men's or women's group or church group or youth group or something has something to do with social ministry. Maybe you work for Lutheran Social Services or somewhere. So if we could just start briefly and go around.
Sure. My name is Dave Nagler, and I'm a pastor down in San Diego. And I also, for our synod, I am the chair of the Hunger and Housing Task Force, and we work with Jubilee Network and some other groups to do some advocacy and policy stuff.
Right on, great. Thank you.
I'm Ashley Zook. I'm just from this church in San Diego.
Welcome. I'm Arnold Jones, also from San Diego.
Thanks. I'm Florence Houghton, I'm from Salem, Oregon, and our women's group is involved with Good Shepherd Lutheran Home of the West, which is a group home sponsored by all three centers, which deal with disadvantaged, you know, adults who need care.
Okay, great. Yes.
I'm Lloyd Gunderson. I'm from Helena, Montana. And I believe the only thing we have had to do with Lutheran Social Service is that we have a grandson who our son and his wife adopted for Lutheran Social Service.
How neat.
Wes Haugen from Fargo, North Dakota. I'm a retired pastor. Our youngest daughter came to us through LSS, Minnesota.
Perfect.
Lou Van Haugen from Fargo, and he stole what I was going to say.
Well, it's a mutual cash.
Yes.
Great.
I'm Mark Prendon, and Dane Carquest, Washington Division, I think, is the one that's right next to our church. Mm-hmm. Bought the building for both their offices and my housing for the homeless women program.
Thanks.
Should we go?
Sure. Howdy. Thanks for coming.
We are introducing ourselves and mentioning any brief connection to Lutheran social ministry. I know, of course, you know.
Roseanne Martinez, I'm long-term staff here, and I've worked at Children's Home Society of Washington and have been on the board of both the national and state advocacy organization. We've done partnerships with the Lutheran Association in both places.
That's terrific. Thanks.
I'm Janice Peterson. I'm on the staff of Christ Lutheran Church in San Diego, and I've been on the board of the Community Christian Service Agency, which is an organization of 27 churches, interdenominational churches that serve the homeless and needy.
Wow, that's great.
I'm Leah Chang. I don't have a current direct connection with Lutheran Social Services, though I have in the past. I was on staff of, actually, a long time ago, a congregation of the former LCA and did a lot of social ministry with them.
Terrific. This year, yeah.
I am the immediate past president of Lutheran Family Service in Portland until we became Lutheran Community Services Northwest with Washington.
I'm Neil, and I'm related to Lutheran Family Service by marriage.
The in-laws of the family service. Yeah, right. Okay.
I'm Mara Wilson, and I worked some with Lutheran Social Services. I was a Spanish interpreter for a number of folks who had services to them. Also done some work with Habitat.
I'm Jeanette Rinty from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, and I know our church has connections with Lutheran Social Services, but I don't know what they are.
Okay, maybe we can explore some of those today. Thanks. You're welcome.
Joanne Horn from Fargo, North Dakota, and I belong to a social concerns committee at First Lutheran Church and work with many different kinds of Lutheran social concerns. And also we just did a rehabilitate, we just completed it this spring for a family that would never have been able to go into a home. We did this home for them.
It's a group effort, you know.
Are you a pastor?
No.
Welcome. Doug, you want to say, once again, we're introducing ourselves in that sort of connection, probably the same connection as yesterday, too.
It was an exciting afternoon and evening, but yeah, pretty much the same. my name's Doug Wolf, and just up here as Spouse. And my connection, I guess, is the closest connection is I've worked at youth management and program development with development of disabled adults. And I haven't worked for an LSS program, but I've worked kind of in tandem with them. So in Southern California, Social Services of Southern California.
Great. Welcome. We're saying our names and any brief connection you might have to Lutheran Social Ministry. Directly, indirectly, anything you want to, you care to come up with?
Hi, Oxfam, and I don't know that I have any connections.
Okay, well, sorry to put you on the spot. Maybe we'll come back. Well, we have, as you can see, I don't want to belabor the, you know, but I think it's important that with this wealth of experience and connection to Lutheran Social Services and this amount of interest, I think it's good that we all kind of know where we're coming from. And I'd like to simply today present a number of statistics, and what we're talking about today is our visions for social transformation. And so I'd like to present some of those concepts and then leave plenty of time for our kinds of discussion about that. And if you would, be thinking about these concepts not only as an American citizen and whatever kinds of responsibilities and privileges are connected for you with that, but also as a Christian living in this country and what that might mean, what that might look like to you to live out your Christian faith publicly. Those two things in the history of our country have been at times almost synonymous, and at other times have been very, very different things. And so what this faith-based initiative is about is kind of, if LSA is one thing I'm presenting on, that the tandem pillar really is the faith-based and community initiative.
all of the kinds of things that we're talking about in terms of the services we're providing, the networks, the connections between the churches, and the congregations, and ministry groups, always have this undercurrent, sort of implicit question about who we are as faith-based providers. What does that mean? How is that different from a well-run, but for this purpose, secular group down the street? Is there a difference? Should there be? How does that look? Those questions have always been implicit in how we go about, how Lutheran Services goes about its ministry. But what the faith-based initiative has done and has received both accolades and criticisms for it has made those questions explicit. It has held those up in the newspaper and on the radio and in speeches by members of Congress and the president and others. It's sort of challenging us in a way as Lutherans and as Presbyterians and others to say, if you're involved in society, if you're serving some purpose in our society as a faith-based group, what does that mean to you? And are there particularities that you hold up as a faith-based group? Technically, that's what the faith-based thing is, I think, in terms of its social dimension. What it is technically in Washington is a series of concepts that the president sort of inaugurated or initiated soon after taking office last winter. And essentially, what it focuses around is new ways of government funding, public funding, coming to groups who identify themselves as faith-based groups, among others, among the broad variety. We went through a kind of a guessing game yesterday, but I'll save you the suspense. Lutheran Services, not as its own entity, but as a roll-up of all of these social ministries across the country, gets about $2.9 billion from government funding. That's a lot of cash. And so we have various questions that come up about that. Can we fulfill, as Lutheran Services, our prophetic voice vis-a-vis the government if we're receiving $2.9 billion, public dollars, from people, even if we're spending that, you know, for the good of the Commonwealth? And then can we also be equally sort of professional and accredited and mainstream with these accountable dollars while serving also a faith-based mission? Are those two things mutually exclusive, you know, and do they need to be? So the faith-based initiative, as rolled out, is asking us those questions. And what I'd like to do, well, if you can spare it tomorrow and the continuing couple of sessions, we'll get into some of the specific legislative tangles and the provisions and some of the technical funding things that are going on here. But today, I think it's important first that we understand as a group the sort of social history of this faith-based initiative. Some of you are going to have much more experience with this and a longer history than I, but I hope to bring up some of these things. And I don't want to do that by continually talking. What I'd like to do, after having described that, is to, first of all, invite us to think about some visions for social transformation, for social renewal. That's been a question in U.S. history since our beginnings as colonies. What are we about as a society? We are the colonies themselves were renewals in a sense. They were new lands and new entities and new groups, each with their own idea of what the sort of utopian, the perfect society might be about. And we've been trying to live that out ever since. And what I have here are three kind of unnamed but probably very familiar visions that have been lifted up at some time for social renewal. And I'm wondering if three of you would volunteer to read these in any particular order. Thanks. And they're probably kind of familiar. Thanks. They're probably kind of familiar, but I've left them unnamed so we can, instead of immediately, you know, making a reference point with them, kind of opening them up to something that somebody said at some point in history that the U.S. takes as a vision for social renewal. If you wouldn't mind. So we'll just kind of read them in a row and think about these, and then we'll get into some other stuff. Yeah, thanks. Please.
I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you took care of me. I was in prison and you visited me. Truly, I tell you, just as you did it to one of these, the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me.
Thanks.
All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded you. And remember, I am with you always to the end of the age.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution.
Thanks. Three kinds of familiar paragraphs, but nonetheless from different sources, and ones that have really been wellsprings of the social change, social reference for us. What I'd like to do is actually ask if you have any others you can think of. I racked my brain, and I know of some others. I didn't want to throw five or six at you, but if you can think of other, not even if you don't have the phrase down specifically in your mind, but other thinkers who have offered visions of social transformation.
Famous, let justice roll down like waters.
Yeah, yeah. Keying in on justice, yeah.
The whole Puritan experience, which draws, so they believed on the gospel of the city on a hill, which was vastly informed both lots of the New England colonies, but a lot of our public thought about purity, and about, you know, what it meant to be the city of God. But the being the city of God it has been a strong notion in American public thought.
Yeah, very interesting. That's right. Other visions, thinkers?
I think Kennedy's asked not what you can do for yourself, but what you can do for your country is certainly mm-hmm. one of them.
That's a very interesting one, especially as one of the sorts of parallel issues here, sort of the corollaries to the faith-based and community initiative that's rolled out, has been not only these explicit controversial things about faith groups, but also the call of renewal for civic service, and almost the reflected and sort of echoing language down through the past couple of decades about that sort of notion of civic service.
Well, not only that, but the things that we do through social ministry certainly has a civic impact, you know,
mm-hmm.
improving the country and the world.
One of the things our social ministry organizations have to do in order to receive government funding and account for it as a funding stream is to register for tax purposes as a 501c3, is the tax language for their existence. And one of the kinds of pieces of language that go with that is the promise to provide for a broad social need, not a sectarian agenda primarily, but a broad social need. So that's very interesting. Others, reasons for transformation. I think we have some stuff to work with here. I was thinking also of Lincoln, who quoted, often like to quote the Old Testament prophets, and about his second inaugural address when he says, "We will bind up the wounds of the nation, care for the orphan and the widow, and those who will have borne the battle," and others. Those are specifics. Or Martin Luther King, and coming out of the hewing a stone of hope out of the mountain of despair. I always like that one. And of course others like Gandhi and even other very serious academic thinkers like Locke or Hobbes, or people who put a lot of thought into what a society was. So, well, I think we have enough stuff to work with on that, but these are the kinds of questions that are being that we play a role in, I should say, in this sort of social renewal. Is it primarily civic? Or is the U.S. sort of supercharged with leading the way in a sort of religious renewal? A lot of our fellow citizens would have that, would take that as a banner and go with it. What I wanted to do then, in terms of these are great visions, I wanted to bring us back to the earth a bit and to the United States in the year 2002 and give you some statistics on the realities in our country and many of you, like I said, are probably familiar with these realities. 1 in 6 American families with children have an annual income of $17,000 or less. That's about the poverty line for a family of that size. 500,000 children, 500,000 are in foster care. 100,000 of those are awaiting adoption currently. 1 in 8 infants and toddlers who are otherwise eligible for child care assistance don't get it. One in eight do get it. 7 in 8 do not get child care assistance they're otherwise eligible for. There is 1 unit of housing for every 9 senior citizens who need housing in this country. 1 in 9. There are 1 million babies born in this country to teen parents. There are the largest single increase in the homeless population have been working full-time, families working full-time with children. Lutheran Services, we went through this yesterday with some of the service provision and things. Lutheran Services serves about 5 million hot meals a year. That was in 2000. And we also have about 28,000 people in assisted living. Those are very real social problems. I mean, those are civic problems to hold up to our visions of social transformation, you know, faith-based or otherwise. And to that, we've had added now to answer these sorts of modern problems that we have, a modern vision for social transformation. America is rich materially, but there remains too much poverty and despair amidst abundance. Government can rally a military, but it cannot put hope in our hearts or a sense of purpose in our lives. Government has a solemn responsibility to help meet the needs of poor Americans and distressed neighborhoods, but it does not have a monopoly on compassion. America is richly blessed by the diversity and vigor of neighborhood healers, civic, social, charitable, and religious groups. Private and charitable groups, including religious ones, should have the fullest opportunity permitted by law to compete on a level playing field, so long as they achieve valid public purpose in curbing crime, conquering addiction, strengthening families, and overcoming poverty. Besides the bold print on the back here, does anyone have an idea of who might have said that and when?
The president.
That was President Bush. And sort of kicking off this faith-based initiative. And so underneath, I mean, the faith-based initiative is about funding streams, the legislation, and tweaking regulations and government bureaucracy. But underneath that, sort of using our Lutheran words, in, with, and under that, perhaps, in a sacramental way, it's a proposed vision. It's somebody's vision for continued to renewing our society. So the question is, what do we do with that? And what is Lutheran Services in America as a faith-based group, people who know these needs in our society, what do we do with this initiative? I wanted to place it just briefly, the sort of initiative, the sort of social history. It has been called, in Washington at least, people who are studying these, devoting their lives to studying these things full-time, as social historians, kind of a new social gospel. In that the social gospel of earlier in the 20th century and the late 19th century had sort of various elements of both a wish for social, for communal renewal, civic renewal, and within that personal renewal or individual renewal, and how those things might feed one sort of a symbiotic relationship between the two. And so the way, at least, this is the faith-based initiative kind of is advertised or publicized continuously, is also a social program about not completely pulling the government back from all of its responsibility for providing social programs, civic programs, but it hints continually and more explicitly at the role that individual or social transformation, individual or personal transformation plays in that. And do faith groups have some sort of, as they said, there's not a government monopoly on that. Do faith-based groups have something to add there? And can faith-based groups add that ingredient without being coercive, without foregoing the sort of individual dignity of the poor and vulnerable people who come to the door. That's kind of the crux of the matter. Yeah?
I have a question for you, which you can either address now or say that you'll address later on, but I'm curious to know. With all of the language about increasing funding for faith-based groups to, you know, to do their work, my suspicion when I hear that has to do with saying, all right, are we just giving government license to abandon the social contract, you know, to care for the widow and the orphan and so forth, as it were. Against that, there's the reality that the federal government and many government levels already do fund many, you know, so-called faith-based organizations, many of which are involved in the Lutheran Services in America, Umbrella, and many other faith-based networks, Catholic Charities, gets a huge amount of money to do a certain sorts of work, legally allowed. And yes, I know that the dividing line often has to do with, I guess bluntly, but how much proselytizing is part of the work, and that's sort of the tinkering point, as it were. How much do you have, and this is where you can talk about this now or later, I'm curious, how much difference would there actually be in funding both across the board? You know, and how much is this just a cosmetic gesture on the part of an administration looking to co-opt a certain amount of rhetoric? You see what and how much of it is really about increasing money to help the poor, the dispossessed, and letting people who do it well do it, which is kind of the rhetoric that's being used. How much money would actually be increase?
Well, that's the main, really, that's, you put your finger on the main criticism of any sort of initiative move, especially in a year with a tight budget when programs for social spending are being cut anyway. And there are various things that are blamed for that as well. But so far there is, I mean, really the blunt answer is that there is no increased funding for specific funding streams here and there, yes, and that's, you know, the Congress plays the game with moving money around, but as a piece of this initiative, there's no part of, you know, saying that there's additional money.
Would be making the same pie, as it were, available to a slightly or greatly enlarged group of agencies or service providers, as it were.
Yeah, it would be roughly the same kinds of. I mean, that's the question about proselytization. The lengthy Greek word about the spirit. Well, actually, does anyone have a good Greek definition? I don't know if you've, in terms of the, it's come to mean, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's come to mean, it's, you know, the government will use a word like that, and in shorthand, it's invested with new meaning as legislation moves along. But it's come to mean the explicit, I guess the explicit sharing of the gospel in that sense, but the explicit, not only is it sharing the gospel, but the explicit need to have someone have a confession of faith or a conversion experience as a part of or before they receive some sort of funding or some sort of service from your agency.
And considering that point, considering the fact that the, you know, LSA groups and others are providing services to such a extraordinarily vulnerable group of people, I get really concerned when that is talked about increasing, because either people are going to just get in line, form the cattle call, and either go through the motions or really feel the pressure to accept something that may not be their cup of water, or taking away from, it's rearranging the pie slices. Maybe removing some of the monies from private, secular, perhaps, providers who I believe have, filled just as important niche as the faith-based.
The non-secular but non-proselytizing agencies, such at LSA and Catholic Charities, who don't proselytize it.
Right.
Well, we have a large spectrum of members, some of whom would like a greater license or greater permission vis-a-vis the government to be able to offer explicit experience religious activity along with those, and make that part of the program.
Could you say a little more about that, please?
Sure. Well, Lutheran Services is an umbrella. It actually is constituted of both the LCA and Lutheran Church Missouri Synod groups, and within both of those bodies, there's a broad range of theological underpinning and belief. And there are, as an umbrella group, we have not taken a sort of public policy position with the faith-based initiative, but we have been supportive of a Senate piece of legislation that does not approach these questions whatsoever. It simply does increase some funding for faith-based groups. I mean, like groups that would not use it for explicit religious purposes, but would use it for the broad social need. And there are some other provisions in the bill we thought were, on balance, more helpful than they were harmful to the people we're serving. So I say that because that is where we have taken a particular position on behalf of all of these agencies together. So we have, within our own sort of boundaries that we've drawn here, significant difference of opinion about what effective social ministry is. And some groups have made the case to me that they would feel hampered if they were not allowed to express what they feel the gospel is and how that has changed them and how that might change the person they're offering soup or counseling services or more complicated things as well. There are equal number of groups who've expressed to me that the gospel is in St. Francis' admonition, to speak it always and sometimes use words, and perhaps more often than not use the action, the gracious abiding presence as you sit with people and serve them, that already is the gospel commitment lived out. And so we have a number of groups where in terms of policy position, we represent a number of groups like that. But in terms of placing this as a vision for social transformation, that's a very, very important question. I mean, how is the government, does the government use this as a sort of stalking horse to in friendly terms, co-opt respected institutions and then fall back on their own commitments? We've, in cautiously encouraging public conversation about faith-based social service, Lutheran Services has always put it in a paragraph about that we're glad that government sees the value of faith-based social services. We ask the government not discontinue its own or forget its own place, fundamental role in providing for all citizens. Usually something like that. That's roughly the same language that a lot of our other national partners use, United Jewish Communities and Catholic Charities and the Episcopal groups and the Presbyterian groups and others. But what do you think of that? I think I've probably talked enough. What kinds of questions and concerns do you have about legislation that would promote this kind of program? And if you have thoughts and insights about our response, are we good as we are? Should we worry about this? We are seen as a titanic network in relation to the government and serving a broad social need. Is it necessary to change, to react to this in some way? Please, I think that
the thing I fear about this kind of legislation, it's wonderful for Lutheran social services, the Catholic social services, or Jewish missions, but what happens when other people claim that they have religious services and they want to also proselytize, and they are quite contradictory to our philosophy? For instance, I'm thinking of extremists like Jim Jones or, I'm just throwing something out, but Al-Qaeda or any of the extreme things, and they say, well, we deserve a piece of the pie too. Doesn't that dilute them what Lutheran social services would get?
There was a very interesting move made about 5 months after this thing got rolling, and the president asked two things. One is his startup legislation in Congress. The other was that the federal departments rethink how they hand out grants and if there should be as many stipulations and documents and forms and things involved with the grant process. There were two interesting moves made, both by groups that we would consider more right of center, religious right groups. One was one of the arguments raised is that they don't want any part of this program because any government money that will come with some strings attached is going to be too much for them. It'll dilute their Christian mission as they see it. The second move, very interesting, was that once the administration was pressed to the wall and said, okay, well, what kinds of religious groups are we talking about here? How broad are we considering religious groups? There were no good grounds for excluding Hare Krishna and Buddhist groups and Hindu groups and Muslim groups. That also caused a sort of peel-off of some of the other groups that wanted really nothing to do with the common pot of money. So it's been a very interesting... You know you're onto a kind of creative social program or something where it brings up this much controversy and feeling, you know, from both sides. This is really an incredible thing. Please.
Generally speaking, many of the many agencies at the local level try with various success to have a relationship with the congregations, which are kind of can be thought of as local nominal owners of the agency in terms of support.
Yeah.
And what kind of conversations, if any, have been given to the fact that once you have outside federal money or county contracts into the mix, do agencies become dependent on outside money, which causes a shift in relating to local congregations that have been traditionally a source of support or attention?
Yeah, well, the figure I said earlier, you know, represented earlier on a national level is represents about 40% of the combined Lutheran social ministry budget. And I mean, that's a significant piece. That's from the federal, state, and local and county governments. I guess it wouldn't, that's one of those things I think that you'd have to, you know, if we do have to shift around our funding or something, if individual social ministries, you start to be challenged on, you know, by government funding, challenged on their own, on how they say they're a faith-based group and they're therefore taking funding. They would have to rethink, I guess, what that sort of shift would be about for them. I think, I'm not sure of the funding. I think each of our members locally would probably, you might all have different experiences with your funding makeups in terms of congregational support. I know the 40% we get from government is a lot more than we receive from the two national church bodies we're affiliated with, quite frankly. And so I think that's where we would put our effort. But I imagine that at Lutheran Social Services of Iowa or Lutheran Social Services of the South or Community Family Life Service in St. Louis, that they have they each have different funding makeups. But that would be a very telling sign, I think, unfortunately. Thoughts, insights, suggestions about these things. These are things that are affecting the way we're living out our social ministry life day to day. I know in San Diego, I was talking to someone there and they were, Catholic Charities, and I think in coordination with some other groups, was thinking about a new homeless shelter in downtown San Diego. And they were significantly thinking about what they could say in their mission statement about being called by Christ or living out the body, you know, living out as the body of Christ, things like that, things that I don't think Lutherans have a theological problem with necessarily, putting in our own statements, rethinking these things because they weren't sure how this legislation was going to play out. I should clarify that right now, there is no change in the law. As a faith-based social service, you're beholden by that tax filing status to make any sort of Bible study or worship or religious activity voluntary. You can provide that, but it must be a voluntary part of what's going on and in no way be coercive or in exchange for a bowl of soup. But the initiative's question gets back to what Mark was asking about earlier, and that is the case is being made, and we can, I mean, there's this disagreement is over how sincere this case is, but the case is being made that faith-based groups bring to the social service roundtable a quality or a dimension, and we've even heard the word effectiveness, that other groups simply do not have. And that's a part of broader arguments, please.
That's where I kind of see this vision for social renewal that in the faith-based initiative that Bush just kind of got his head in the sand. Faith-based groups are at the table and involved in social renewal. The other thing I worry about in terms of the vision is that the danger in the government relinquishing its responsibility to be involved, that it could end up being a slippery slope of saying faith-based organizations will be responsible, therefore there's no place for government to have a role.
Mm-hmm.
Faith-based organizations are at the table all over the country in terms of being involved in social renewal. The funding part that I worry about, and I know there's no funding attached to it now, is the whole notion of block granting, then pulling out all the money from groups that sound faith-based, and then reducing that amount of money available at all, and then new regulations for acquiring those dollars.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the concept of block grants? That's largely been something since I believe the Nixon administration, probably earlier, about how the federal government at least will forward out, just distribute money. Some programs are by formula, by size of city or state or number of people meeting a certain means-tested criteria, meaning a certain eligibility standard or income standard or something like that. And block granting is simply a pro forma thing by the federal government to say we will give so much to state, sometimes in relation to formula, but using it as a way to ultimately decrease the total amount of funding available. That's a grave concern. I mean, it's interesting that we begin talking about visions for social transformation, and we come back to money. I mean, and I think that's kind of the, I guess, not terribly profound, but I think that I think a lot of what we do is driven by that kind of passion. And going back to what this person was saying here, I mean, I think, we can talk about our mission and how we are faith-based, but we're walking a fine line at Lutheran Services when we talk about our professionalism and the way we can provide mainstream counseling practices and good medical care and hospital systems and premier adoption network counseling and strength, services and things without money. I mean, I think that's one of those things where I'm not sure that all PLCA or LCMS Lutherans understand the breadth of social, organized professional social ministry. And Mark, please.
Well, what I find interesting is getting back to the two bits from the various gospels that you had people read and the different visions. I think that one can see very different visions about what it means to be a person of faith in the world. One is the bit from Matthew, simply saying, how is the realm of God revealed in the world? Well, it's through feeding the hungry and through this and through that. And it's not through. It's in quite a bit of contrast to the from which gospel was that?
They're both Matthew's.
Okay, they're both Matthew's.
The story of the sheep and the goats, and then the Great Commission.
They both kind of get at the question of what is the point of being the church in the world, if you will. And, not the question as you were getting at earlier of inner spirituality, as it were, although there's a relationship sort of between inner spirituality and the church in the world. But what does it mean? Either one, and are we feeding the hungry, or are we ultimately desiring to feed the hungry, or are we ultimately desiring to baptize the hungry in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit? They need not be exclusive in desire, I don't think, you know, but those, I mean, those are interesting choices on your part, because they're quite different constituencies in the social service networks.
That's right.
Point to different.
That was those selections were intentional, because I think those are two elements or two visions for transformation that are intention in a faith-based initiative. And I mentioned on the sort of soundbite Pat Buchanan and Hillary Clinton, because I think they sort of embody what might be a personal transformation argument and a social transformation, even if it's the individual who is being helped or assisted in some way or put on firmer economic and emotional ground. It's, you know, the corresponding vision is the village as opposed to the person's bootstraps and stuff. Please, you had some.
As Presbyterians, we have tremendous admiration for the work of Lutheran. Catholic Family and Children's Services, but we sometimes wonder whether setting up a separate organization dilutes the sense of responsibility of the individual congregation for performing social services within its community and even perhaps within its own membership.
Yeah, that's a common argument. That's a good one, and I think that's been raised in connection with the faith-based initiative too. Reasons why people would not, from some mainline congregations, why they would not want to partake in a program that relies solely on German funding. Coming again, what you were saying.
This is not the reason, perhaps the principal reason that we've chosen not to, in our home church, not to. Take advantage as yet of any significant amount of the federal funds. Our reasoning there partly relates to that, partly relates to who pays the piper, who provides both the program and a huge amount of complexity of paperwork and regulations, but also what you alluded to before, and that is how much of the sacramental mission of the church should be combined with the social activity of the church. And we've chosen to make a significant combination, a significant amount of combination in our own church. And, but the handicap of that, of course, is that it prevents us from taking advantage of the level of professionalism that you're able to take advantage of with a large national social service organization.
I mentioned earlier, I think just a moment before you came in, that it's ironic. We went over some statistics about Lutheran services yesterday, and this Lutheran services national umbrella is really 5 years old, and it's grafted onto social service commitments that are hundreds of years old, along with Presbyterians. And so I think we've been through that history together, and I think the social gospel about 100 years ago was a critical, crucial turning point in sort of divergent directions. Not mutually exclusive, but I think different understandings about that. Many of these now professional service organizations and hospitals and things grow out of a congregational commitment or a series of congregational commitments that responding to a need in their society or in their community or something had incorporated at some point, you know, and kept things separate. And then as the in a parallel track, the government structure of the 20th century, as it has gotten bigger and has more delineated service funding to groups, the faith-based services have responded and connected to those things in different ways. They've had to come and reach them somehow. In other words, that arm has had to be extended, you know, a bit further with maybe a separate hand of the same body. In other words, so that's a very good critique, and it's one that It's one that's being made, I think, about the faith-based initiative in the past 18 months.
You know, we keep talking about the money, but I think that if communities, if we had Lutheran social service entities within a community, they're going to get volunteers, which is going to offset an awful lot of money that that congregations contribute. I myself would be happy to do it. I mean, look at how this place operates. You know, just
yeah.
Volunteers.
I was struck by that, by the
difference. And another thing, you know, we can pick apart the faith-based initiative and find a lot of little flaws in it, but I work for the federal government, I work for the state of Montana, mm-hmm. and I know that individual organizations like Lutheran Social Ministry and Services is going to run a more efficient organization than anything the government's ever done except run an army.
What do you see? Please, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that always I've kind of sold Lutheran Social Services as being able to provide as a whole when, as Lutherans, we put our money into an agency that can accomplish far more than we could as individual congregations. And really, two of, and yes, I think that they're more efficient than government agencies. On the other hand, I really believe Matthew 25 is more about what Jesus knew would happen to us when we feed the poor.
Hmm. You want to expand on that?
Well, I guess that, I volunteered for 6 months with Mother Teresa, and I know it changed me. I'm not sure what I did really for the poor, but I sure know what they did for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always felt that in some ways we look at Matthew 25 as what we should go out and do, and whereas Jesus knew that if we really did that, the transformation would take place.
I think that's a great insight, and just preaching on that actually a couple weeks ago. That's something I think that is that's something to certainly be lifted up. And in fact, I don't think that's exclusive. I think that can help an understanding of. I understand your point about the professional. I mean, I'm working for this group. I understand the professionalism point, but I think that can help. With our connections that we build between SMO social ministry groups, agencies, and congregations, and the volunteerism that happens in between. It's true the volunteers cannot be psychiatric counselors, they cannot be social workers credited, they can't be doctors and nurses and other things, but there are a number of ways that we can expand those resources and involve in that way, involve volunteers, not only for our own professional bottom line, but precisely because it's, you know, it involves more people in what Jesus saw as the gospel mission there. Any comments on that? Or I think it's...
I couldn't agree more with that comment. No.
Okay. Please.
I would also just add that there's the surprise element that's part of that text as well. Is while the person is surprised at the end of the story, it's also kind of this revelation of who's been kind of in on the inside work with God and what God has been doing. To that end, some of the lines between secular and religious blur, faith-based. You may find that a lot of secular organizations were actually completely in line with what God was, God's activity in the world. And I think that's what that story also tells us.
Mm-hmm.
And then conversely, there may be some faith-based organizations that weren't doing anything related to where God's activity in the world were.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in that sense, we kind of have this superficial dichotomy of, you know, that really underneath there's some right. mixing around it. Yeah, that's a good point. Please.
Are there any examples that you know of coalitions of denominations getting together to perform services? Or is the situation the mainline or whatever leftist, rightist groups, denominations competing with each other for the same dollars? That's one of the things that I think Jim Wallace raised in some article on Sojourn. The other thing was the Gates Foundation, which has now given millions and millions and millions of dollars toward international health, will not give money unless it's a coalition
right.
of smaller organizations or smaller and larger organizations getting together so that they don't overlap and compete and kind of double their services. And I just wondered if your experiences, is there a move or is there even a nod toward the cooperation of different denominations rather than the Presbyterians and Lutherans competing for the same buck?
Yeah, I think there's understanding. Probably in the majority of Lutheran social ministry groups around the country, they are working in some service area with other groups, not only because of their own sort of local makeup, but because some of the government contracts are written that way. In fact, that if it's that there needs to be, for instance, for care for homeless people, there's. The way that this money, you're talking about the block grants earlier, I think this is a perfect example of this. There is money given, federal government responsibility for homeless grants, assistance for homeless people who are recognized as needing what's called a continuum of care, complete different, whole bunch of different services in a service line. And the way that the contract is written is that a community will come together and identify 8 or 9 or 10 of their priority things that homeless people sit on boards and things and for people who have now benefited and have said this is what the realities here are, and so that builds in some collaboration and combination into the process. That doesn't always work great, but some of that is driven by the government stuff. I'd like to think most of it is driven by the sort of collegiality in the body of Christ that we recognize that we'll work with simply anyone who wants to work with us on things. And I might say, I'm sorry.
Would that collegiality extend beyond informal or formal partnerships of mainline denominations? Mm-hmm. But do you know if it has in any sense extended to partnerships for specific purposes between one or two mainline denominations and other that we would call more what? Bible-believing, spiritual, fundamentalist congregations in certain parts of the country where they're a...
I will say this carefully because I don't want to sound self-righteous about this any more than anybody else, but I think in those cases where that doesn't happen, I don't think it's for lack of some groups extending the hand and other groups not accepting. There's simply that relies, I think, on an understanding of what the church is. I mean, I think a theological understanding of the Lutherans and others are part of a greater body, something greater than ourselves, and organized or not, but part of a greater spiritual presence in the world. And other groups simply don't operate that way. A different understanding that would determine that they will go about their social ministry in their own way. So. I mean, I think that's. I hope that's a good enough answer for that. I mean, yeah. But certainly. I think in most cases, I think it depends on the need as determined by the local communities. If there is in inner city Chicago a dramatic need for affordable housing, rental and otherwise, and a significant number of people in that neighborhood are either AME Zion church parishioners or Muslim. And those groups have come together to provide housing. Now, if they get far beyond that and they talk about theological issues other than that, they have some honest disagreement. But when it comes to providing housing for people who need housing, and as that's recognized as the work, the work of the gospel, I think the people in the housing are satisfied that that's good gospel work. I might also say candidly that within our own borders. I've been surprised in the past 2 years, pleasantly surprised, by the way the ELCA and the LCMS have been able to work together on a number of service things like adoption and other things, where despite our very real differences in some cases, when it comes to doing the work and providing for very real social needs, we've been able to work pretty well together. So it's kind of been a neat realization for me. Please,
Oh, in Seattle, we have, you were mentioning homeless, ended up with CSS and LSS. They combine all their funding of dealing directly for homeless into one lump sum, and through the Church Council of Greater Seattle, we have two different programs that help dealing with homeless in Seattle. So they are jointly just using their funding, but not being directly in the work itself. But the Church Council of Greater Seattle are the ones that deal with the problem with homeless.
How's that working for them?
I think it's working pretty well. But I don't know if it's fortunately or unfortunately, there's two different programs of homeless programs with Church Council of Greater Seattle. And they have two different ideas of way of dealing with the homeless problem, and they're both, you know, going through the pieces of pie.
That's something, you know, that's been something they've been trying to rethink at the national level about how that money goes out, and if they, how they can cut down competition between groups who are trying to do the same kinds of things, but you know, don't not wanting to be counterproductive. Yeah.
There's an example in San Diego that that shed some light on several of the points that we've been dealing with here. It's a group of 25 congregations that run the gamut from Lutheran to Christian Science.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's a very wide gamut, it excludes some groups who have their own programs. I think the Roman Catholic participation is minimal.
So
it covers a lot.
Okay.
It came about in a very organic way because the problem was larger than any one congregation could deal with, and yet all the congregations were having to confront it. People showing up in desperate need, and there was a very large number of them. Mm-hmm. And it required a level of professionalism that was a burden on the individual congregations. But by grouping together, and again, it's currently 25 different congregations.
27. It's all the better.
As of
a couple of years out of it. But one of the points that I thought was really, really worth noting is because it covers such a wide spectrum of denominational outlets, it mitigates against proselytizing in a very basic way.
Yeah.
Nobody can really bring their unique vision to bear without getting somebody else's in a confrontational position. And so that has had in the past some points of friction because many of the volunteers, and again the point that you brought up, the real power of this is that it brings out 100 volunteers for every professional, so that the amplification of the funding is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the volunteers, you know, very much want to proselytize, and so there's some contention there. But over the years, it has been realized by most of the people that doesn't work, that really hinders the mission. The other point that I think needs to be made is that there is a real transition that this particular agency has never crossed in taking federal funding or government funding, period, because then another external set of regulations has to be applied. Not only the pragmatic burden of the paperwork and whatnot, but just another point of view has to be folded in, and when you're trying to accommodate this wide range of faith-based points of view, you got all the trouble you need. They never accepted any funding.
It seemed, you know, it's funny, and I think that's a really valuable and viable model. And I think, and if I dare hazard this, I think that is a uniquely American experience.
I think so. You know, where you see a problem and you address the problem rather than seeing a theology and saying, how can I apply the theology?
even in the diversity as well.
A different
yeah,
problem.
Yeah, that we have both the friction and the sort of plurality that is endemic to that, I think, are both, those are both twin pillars, that's what we struggle with.
And it has succeeded. The original group was, just a half dozen congregations, and it's grown even past what I remember.
Today, and when you get back next week, it might be a lot.
Hey, maybe signing up Unitarian, I don't know.
That's yeah, perhaps, since they already have them.
Go ahead.
I say that's perhaps not a unique model. I think there are a number of communities that have that have this sort of ongoing organization. Tacoma has associated ministries, which includes the Jewish congregation and a wide variety of Protestant congregations, churches, African American churches are particularly included. But it has involved itself in work for the elderly, the food bank, repainting homes, health services, and a number of other activities, which, as you say, individual churches would not be able to undertake. Again, it has avoided the use of federal funds to a pretty large extent for the same reasons.
Incidentally, one Presbyterian congregation even makes space available.
We take care of the homeless. Our church takes care of the homeless for 1 week in rotation with a number of other congregations around the community.
It's interfaith hospitality. This may have to be we'll have to take one more and then we'll have to close for today.
Even as we are noting that an individual congregation often cannot address a problem endemic to a given area on its own, and it does wonderful work joining the people of its own faith community or across many lines, so that they join together to do things because it's necessary, not just because because it has a very other fruit, which is a wonderful thing. Even as we're saying, working with those who need social services, but it brings about transformation in those providing the social services as well, and even on the more micro level. I have to ask, though, beyond. So yes, we have 25 or 30 congregations getting together to meet a given need in a certain city, and they can meet it, they can do it together, and that's wonderful. For me, so what beyond that? There are many problems in our society, as we all know, that are not purely localized in their their phenomena, mm-hmm. in their causes, in their effects, mm-hmm. and so forth. And so then, for me, then that comes back to super local mm-hmm. bodies, and kind of the big one we already have in place is the government, whether it's the state government or the federal government, which, like, for me, becomes a question not so much of whether or not to use federal money for such purposes, but when and how, and what can we, and not to forget that the federal government is us. Mm-hmm. I feel a strong sense of ownership every time I vote. And to feel very much a sense of mm-hmm. deciding how we will use that money to address problems that individuals, congregations, groups of congregations cannot do.
Well, that's a great note to end on. We're going to be today we're discussing pretty much our interaction with the social visions that are around us and we operate from. If you can spare it tomorrow at the same time, I'm going to talk a little bit about what some of the legislation is here. I kind of just have to bore you out of your seats with that, but I think that's important just for 5 or 10 minutes to tell you what actually the pieces are that we're talking about here. But then get to the notion of what it is we're funding here. I've heard a lot more in relation to the faith-based initiative about charity, the haves giving to the have-nots, which reinforces both the haves and the have-nots in their social place. And what we might be able to discuss more in relation to that is how are these systemic issues across our land? And are there ways to incorporate in our ministries, vis-a-vis the government, both charity and justice? And I hope you can come back for that. Thursday, we'll be talking about, not to be exclusionary or tribal, but some of the, what I feel are the Lutheran contributions to sort of the social voice, certainly shared with our brothers and sisters in Christ, but some of those elements. And Saturday, what the heck is Lutheran Services in America doing in Washington, D.C.? And should we be there? So please, if you can spare it, come on back. Thank you.
Thank you.